Yeah.
Augusta. Oh, here you go. I got a question for you. Yes. 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution. Here's an audible. Would you, I think you know exactly what I'm about to ask you.
I've got a
you?
Pretty good idea.
Would you play a round at Augusta National with current Masters champion Patrick Reed?
I thought you were going to go Kuchar. And I was going to say, of course, yeah, I would play with
Kuchar. Wow, you, so, but you're not going to say,
says Kuchar's a really nice guy.
Right. But, like, right now, Billy Payne calls you up, and I know he's not in charge over there anymore, but I'm sure he still has some pull.
Augusta supersedes it, of course.
He says,
it's Augusta National.
JD, I got some good news and bad news.
We're doing a new game show.
Patrick Reed wants to play around, and he wants a marker with him, and he wants you to be his marker because he heard you talking about him on the radio.
He might try and beat me up.
Yeah, so you would play, you'd play around,
yeah,
with Patrick,
course,
Reed.
Augusta National, of course.
Okay, all right. Would you talk to him? What if he said, hey, JD, come on in, let's get a picture made so we can preserve this moment.
And he can stand on his tiptoes like he did for the Augusta State team
photo. Wow.
It's true. There's one of those.
Oh, he's
hanging,
not tall?
There's one of those. I don't know how tall he is, but there's one of those hanging in a restaurant in St. Simons. And if you know to look, you can see he's on his tiptoes in the photo.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. I'd rather play with my man Watson.
Bubba or Tom?
Either.
Either one?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's not the question, though. You got to play with Patrick Reed.
I think I have told you this story before. When my friend Bill Van Orman, who's Andy Lander's neighbor, is one of the great guys in the world. His son Billy's a golf pro, has played in the U.S. Open. They took us out to Jennings Mill one day. And Mr. Van, of course, huge Lady Dogs fan. And this is right after Angie had graduated. I love Angie. She was great. So Mr. Van Orman said, hey, you know, Angie's only played golf a couple of times. I don't think she and Bubba had started dating then. Said, so she's going to play. I'm like, oh, that's great. I love Angie. She's awesome. So I wound up playing. You know, of course, I was terrible. And it was funny then because Angie, and even to like Mary Beth, was telling me a couple of years later that Angie thought it was so funny because you were playing bad and your face just kept getting redder and redder and you got mad. And then I started thinking, like, okay, so she's played golf with me, the worst player in the world, and obviously her husband, who has won 2 Masters. That might be the greatest wide gap between talent of golfers. And she was a great athlete, too. She's a great basketball player here that anyone has ever played with.
Yeah. Except for, you know, if you played, like, with some of those Georgia golfers in some event, too, then that's probably the same thing for them.
Yeah.
Like, we played one time with Brian Harmon.
Oh, yeah. And so he's, like, played, you know, with Spieth, Tiger. Well, God, I mean, the guy finished 2nd in the U.S. Open. He's one of the best players, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, whoever he was paired with that yeah. day versus being paired with us one year for a round at over at the Georgia Club.
But I thought about that when Angie and Bubba got married. I was like, oh, my God. I guess she's played with my sorry self. And then when Bubba won the Masters, I just remembered that story.
Yeah.
And then the fact, too, she was like, oh, I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, she was a senior when Mary Beth was a freshman. And I brought up that story. And Mary Beth's like, oh, yeah, she told us about that. She said you were playing terribly and your face just got redder and redder.
Like, darn it, I'm not going to win a Masters. There's no shot of that. All right, moving on to the 5 at 5 with the we'll stick with golf here for a second. The PGA Championship currently in a weather delay, but we'll just go ahead and say we got 2 rounds left. We got Saturday and Sunday coming up. How do you reassess things now versus who you like before the tournament versus who you think's going to win it now?
I think your winner is. I'm going to go out on a limb here, Chris. Your winner's coming out of that top group right there. And I look right now, Woodland could win. Our man Kisner could win. Koepka could win. DJ could win. Schwartzel could win. Peters could win. Fowler could win. I think it's coming out of that group. There are just too many good players. Unless somebody goes out there and does something like 64-63, I just think your winner's coming out of there. And I think your number, I mean, especially with that rain tonight, And they're not going to trick it up like the USGA does sometimes. I think your number might be around 18 under par to win the thing. Which I believe, does Day have the record for the PGA low score when he beat Spieth? If he get it to 20?
19 or 20, I want to say,
and beat Spieth by maybe three.
Because Tiger once owned all those records.
He did. I think Tiger might still have the margin of victory, but I think Day got the lowest. And, in fact, McIlroy's got the margin of victory, I believe, when he won at Kiowa in 2012. But I do think Day got to 20 or so. I think he was at 20. And what was did Spieth finish maybe at 17 that year? 2015 PGA at Whistling Straits. Yeah, Day got to 20 under. And Spieth wound up at 17.
Okay. How about being 17 under and you lose by three shots?
Wow. You know who tied for fifth that year? Brooks Koepka.
Koepka? This appears to be another one, but if he at least finishes in the top 20, that will be 13 top 20s in 20 major starts for him.
And like I said, if he wins the thing, the last two, somebody might correct me on this, but I'm 99% sure I'm right. Tiger in 00 and Nicholas in 80. The last two players to win the U.S. Open and PGA in the same year, Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
So can you imagine Brooks Koepka's name in that group?
But, when you look at Gary Woodland, Kevin Kisner, Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Charles Schwartzel, Peters, Fowler, all those guys, he's got more majors.
He does.
Than any of them. In fact, would it be combined? Because Johnson and Schwartzel have won,
read the names off to me again.
Woodland, Kisner, zero.
Yeah.
Johnson, one. Schwartzel has one.
Yeah.
Peters, none. Fowler, none.
Yep, so that's two total.
Yeah, so he has more.
Yep.
He's got as many as them combined. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you do have a couple guys at like five. Adam Scott is five under par, but Molinari's there at five under. Don't sleep on him. Everyone slept on him at the Open, and what happened?
You know, here's another thing, too. You know what's crazy? Walter Hagen won back in the 20s. He won the British and the PGA in the same year. That didn't happen again for, it was almost 70 years, and Nick Price did it in 1994. Well, since Price did it in 94. Tiger's done it twice in 00 and 06. Patrick Harrington did it in 08. Then McIlroy did it in 14. So something didn't happen for 70 years. It's happened. You know, Price did it in 94. And then in the 2000s, it's happened four times. So it's happened five times in the last 24, 23 years after not happening for like 70 years.
Yeah.
So for Molinari, who knows? You know, that's another reason for me. Not that anybody else cares. Just knowing the order of these and stats like that, the PGA moving to May, it's going to mess up all that stuff because it's not going to be comparing apples to apples.
Well, and even with the connection that it's had all of a sudden with Bridgestone being the week before.
That's exactly right.
You're going to lose that. I don't know what's going to be the week before now.
I wonder if they're going to do, because you know the Bridgestone, Firestone's losing their WGC status. Memphis is getting it. Home of FedEx, you know. So I wonder if that'll be the week before now.
So that'll be the
I don't know.
So that tournament essentially, even though it'll be in a different place, will just stay the week before the PGA.
I'm just guessing. It would make sense.
Is the Players now going to be in March?
Yes, going back to March. I always liked it better in March.
So the Players in March, the Masters in April, then PGA May, then June, July, but then you're
and then they're saying playoffs in August. That's where they're missing the boat. Nobody cares about the playoffs.
No.
And I love going to East Lake. I enjoy it, but that's because I'm kind of a golf nerd. I'm a terrible player, but I love watching it. But for your mainstream sports fan that pays attention for really five times a year with the Players, because people want to see that the great players get wet at the Players Championship, you know, nobody cares. You're ready for football to get started. You got the pennant races going.
Yeah, baseball. We got two Masters 1000 events in tennis. They're in Canada this week. They'll be in Cincinnati next week, and then the U.S. Open's going to start, and then kickoff's going to be here. Which brings me to the next question in the 5 at 5, Jeff. We are 1 week now into preseason practice for Georgia. So, Jeff, what are your insiders telling you about what we've learned so far about this team?
there's tremendous competition with this team, which you would expect with the way Georgia's recruited. You know, Kirby and the staff holding together that first class and bringing in some pieces, a remarkable class in 17, and then a class for the ages in 2018. And these young guys are fighting to get time. There's tremendous competition at every position. This team is fast, physical, big, and hungry.
Is a leader emerging for the other corner spot so far?
That's a pretty good question there. I would say Mark Webb and Amir Speed would probably be in play depending on where Tyreek McGee is going to play. Is he going to be more the star, more the corner? But I would guess, just if you had to kind of look at it as your five DBs, you would probably say LeCount Reed, Baker obviously, then out of Speed, Webb, McGee. Those would probably be your six guys for the five spots now. But there's some really good young players out there. And tomorrow is a scrimmage. And I think tomorrow is a pretty good assessment. When you see that first scrimmage, not that anything's finalized, of course. We're just a week in. But tomorrow's the first day, I think, when the coaches get an idea like, all right, here are the 70 who are going to dress. Here are the 70 that are going to be traveling with us on the road. Here are the freshmen that might could help us right now. Now, of course, guys can emerge. Things can change, especially with the new redshirt rule. And the season's so long now, things can change. But tomorrow is kind of that first real big day. I guess you could say, like, if you were taking a class, tomorrow would be your first big test.
You know, it's interesting that I haven't seen much said about how things are shaping up along the offensive line, too. And I wonder if it's everyone just knows that whoever plays there, Georgia's offensive line is probably going to be really good. But we know Thomas and Gilyard, those two spots. But
and
as far as
it's either Mays or Wilson at right tackle.
Yeah, but like that's the question. Like, I mean, you haven't really gotten a sense of, well, is one of those guys ahead of the other at this point, or how, but I mean, maybe tomorrow that's the thing. That first scrimmage will start to get some of those details.
And I think both of those guys are straight tackles. But listen, Sam Pittman likes to cross train those guys. He really does a terrific job of covering his bases on both fronts. When he goes out, and especially the last 2 years, because it was a five-man offensive line class, he has in his mind, this guy's a left tackle, this guy's a left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. But then when they get here, he cross-trains those guys. Remember when practice started last year, Andrew Thomas, I believe, was working at right guard. They were getting him some work there, and then he showed the feet good enough, like, hey, we can move this guy to the outside.
But I remember last year, and maybe some of that was – I mean, it turned out he was really good, but I – you know, you do get a bit of, like, a lot of hype about freshmen. But, you know, I remember hearing a lot about him early on, and really just, like, the length of his arms, how he didn't have to, you know, like, he didn't have to bend over to tie his shoes and all that.
Yeah, very
– yeah, bright.
Very bright. I mean, but you think about it, though – I mean, those three freshmen on offense last year, I mean, Fromm, Swift, and Thomas.
Yeah. Now they're sophomores. Although Fromm trying to hold off Fields for that in that quarterback competition.
I did have a true freshman who apparently has made some big plays. So we've heard about James Cook, the young tight end Luke Ford.
Okay. Really rooting for him because he is named after Luke Skywalker.
As young Padawans, we are all pulling for him.
All right, 5-5, moving on. Falcons preseason game number one tonight. Jeff, if we were going to watch this game, what would we be watching for? Or maybe we should say, what is our old friend Ryan Goldstein watching for tonight out of this Falcons team?
Ryan's got to tell us how that second unit looks. Chris, you've been nailing this. How that second unit looks on the front seven defensively. And maybe who are – you know, you got Julio, you got Sanu in there. Who's going to – and you got Ridley coming in as well. You know, is there another pass catcher that might emerge? Because I think you know what you got in Freeman and Coleman. Obviously with Matt Ryan, you know, the whole thing hinges on him staying healthy. The offensive line's at the very least solid. Maybe is there a second teamer that stands out there? You like the secondary, but I'm with you. Kind of when you look at some of the backups on that front seven, it would be akin to in college having a couple of two stars and walk-ons that you're leaning on.
Yeah. No, it's like the Falcons and Pro Football Focus rated the rosters, you know, at one point during the summer, and says the Falcons have the second best roster in football.
With the Eagles number one.
With the Eagles number one. Okay. But I feel like with Atlanta, it's top heavy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. Maybe a lot of teams are like that.
It's hard to keep depth with a salary cap. That's what you got to draft good every year.
Yeah.
But that goes back to kind of what you were saying. And listen, Dimitrov, his first few drafts were not very good. His last few have been really good. The sixth-round linebacker from Yale, that's one. Maybe the guy will be great, but that's – so you got Devin Bellamy here.
Yeah.
You know, that's one where – you just kind of hope that wasn't a wasted pick.
And you got Jones and Campbell, and then Duke Riley coming into his second year. And, you know, his rookie season was a little bit underwhelming. But, you know, yeah, after that, you got that guy from Yale. And the defensive line, they drafted the dude from South Florida, Dedrin Sinat. You got Beasley and Jarrett that'll be moving back there. But, you know, after that, it's Brooks Reed and Jack Crawford, too. You know, two guys they've picked up in free agency in the last couple of years. And then, of course, McKinley also. But yeah, I mean, it's top-heavy. And Atlanta's defense has been good, and it's been young, and it's definitely progressed the last couple of years under Quinn. You can see he's, you know, he's building that model he came from in Seattle. But it's just, you know, you get one or two guys banged up, hurt, then, I don't know, things get a little bit dicey.
But, you know, one of the things you and I have talked about so often with the draft, and listen, it takes all kinds. There have been great players from small schools that have gone early and late, great players from big schools that have gone early and late, bust from big and little early and late. We all know that. But in general, when you kind of look at some of the great, quote-unquote, steals in NFL draft history, Tom Brady went to Michigan, Terrell Davis went to Georgia, Richard Sherman went to Stanford.
Well, even like this Grady Jarrett, who looks like
went to Clemson.
Yeah, they took him in the fifth round. He's an absolute steal right now. But yeah, he came from Clemson, and that's why I've always said, if I was an NFL GM and I got to the sixth or seventh rounds, and truly, you are guessing, and maybe you've got some, you've had scouts and you've watched these guys and you've got some sense of them, but I've just said I'm not taking a linebacker from Yale in the sixth round.
Bellamy?
Exactly. If I'm going to err, I'm going to err on the side of
here's
a guy from a big school.
Well, think about this. Just Devin Bellamy, one of the biggest plays of the season, beat the ninth pick in the draft for a strip sack, fumble recovery, Georgia wins.
Yeah. Right. And then did he go undrafted?
I don't think he got picked.
He didn't. He signed. I think he's in Houston.
Yeah,
he signed as an undrafted free
he'll
agent.
Make the team.
And then, yeah, and the Falcons are a pretty good case there. Just with when you look at Grady Jarrett being a late round pick and took him in the fifth round, and all of a sudden he's one of the stars of the defense.
No doubt, and we both love that pick. Do you think some of that sometimes it's the GMs or some maybe show that we found this guy, we had our eye on this guy in the late rounds, because you're not going to get nitpicked on that nearly as much.
Sure, yeah.
I think there's some of that.
But I feel like when you get guys from schools like that, like Yale, if they were really
big-time
NFL material,
Because the flip side of that, like we talked, for the most part, the small school player who goes very high, they're usually great. The two most obvious examples are Walter Payton and Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
But even looking at Phil Sims, you know, Flacco, Most of the small school guys who go high,
they're not busts.
No.
Yeah. Carson Wentz is a recent example.
Great call. And they've got a chip on the shoulder, too.
All right, that's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. We'll